Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. And this is a controversial and hard-hitting show about women who find themselves married to either gay men or bisexual men, or they'll be any kind of sexual man that's not a straight man. I know it's really hard to be politically correct, but, you know, there's just so many different kinds of men, asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, gay sexual, you know, you name it, it's out there. So even men who are transgendered, you know, whatever the case may be, if it's a man who's non-straight, that's what this show is for. And I want to welcome you because there are millions of us around the world who are in this situation. I know it's really difficult when you're going through it and there's no place to turn and people don't understand it. So you know that you have the show here and you have me as a support. And tonight we're going to have on my very special guest who's going to help us get through the night. This is Suzette Hinton. Can you hold on just one moment and let me see if Suzette is there? Hi, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I am doing good. I tell you what, this spring forwarding, I have to admit, is kind of kicking my behind.
Mine too. I feel so tired that I lost an hour's sleep.
Yeah, so, I didn't expect it, but truly.
I know. I think something is really mixed up here. I think they should just keep moving the clock back an hour each time. They keep giving us that extra hour sleep, and it doesn't matter if it's day or night or light or dark, we'll adjust to it, right?
I think so. I agree with you.
I think it would have to be easier to adjust to that than to have to adjust to losing that hour sleep every year, right?
I totally agree. I totally agree. I've been kind of walking around in a dazed state all day.
Well, maybe we can do a couple things about that, like make our show a little shorter, because I'm sure everybody could use the sleep, right?
I think they probably could.
Yeah, I know we could, right? Because I'm even older than you, and I can use it. And also, maybe we can lift ourselves up a little bit tonight and, you know, listen to a song or two in between. I know that last weekend we weren't on because of the fact that I was in Houston with our healing weekend. And
yeah,
what a weekend that was, Suzette.
Oh, wow.
I know. I wish you could have been there. You would have really felt inspired.
I know I would.
There were many wonderful women from all over the country and the world, not just, you know, this country, but also we had our wonderful friend Yasna from Australia, and, you know, Jody came in from Hawaii. There were women from Texas, women from California, from New Jersey, from all over. It was really amazing. Some of the strongest women anyone could ever hope to meet. Those Texas women are strong, and I think it's just contagious. But it was really a wonderful weekend. We had a wonderful time with Janine Finelli. Janine's been on our show a few times. She's our health coach, just like you're our emotional coach. Janine is a health coach giving us healthy habits. You know, it's so funny because the size of Janine's body is about the same size as my index finger. I'm never quite sure whether my index finger is heavier than her body. It kind of looks like that to me. But she's just like a little wisp of the wind, but she's so inspirational, and she's so loving and kind, and she's also a straight wife, so, you know, she's gone through the whole pain herself, and it was such a learning weekend for all of us, you know, by sharing our stories, and, you know, women at all different phases of their recovery. Some are advanced into it, some of them are just beginning the road, some of them are just on the road, and moving very slowly, but still they'll get there one day. But it's just so sad that there's so much pain among so many women that they've gone through so much, so many wasted years. And, you know, it really hurts me. And I talked to the women there also while I was there, that about, you know, we have to stop taking the role of being victims. I mean, we can feel like victims ourselves, but we can't try to create that image to the public because – people aren't buying into it, and they're just not feeling any sympathy towards us.
Yeah.
Have you found that?
You know, I found that when I tend to mention it, it's as if the feeling I get is the deer in the headlight response. You said it's almost like you're talking, the energy is fine, you mention it, and the air goes out of the room, and there's this kind of blank stare kind of feeling that tends to permeate situations. And you would think that by now it would be different, but it's not. It's not. And that's why it's so important for those that are going through this to support one another. Because many times other people, though they love us, they can't go there. I don't know if it's
and you know
afraid.
What I think, even if they're sympathetic, they could be sympathetic, but they still don't understand in the same way.
Yeah,
and
they
I understand
don't.
That. You know, it's like I watch all these shows on television about breast cancer, and I know people who go through it, and my heart goes out, but I've never had it. So it's not the same.
Right. Yeah, this is
so
true.
I can't really, you know, say that I understand what you're going through because I don't understand what they're going through. Do you?
No. I don't understand it, but I think what ends up happening is when you make it your intention to be empathetic with people, you might not have gone through the very same thing, but there are certain feelings attached to it that you may have experienced that causes you to be able to at least join with them from a place of feeling. And a lot of times for us that have gone through being either married or dating someone that is gay, we don't even have that. It's like people can't even, they don't even want to go there as far as even the feelings of humiliation, the feelings, you know, of betrayal, the feelings of not, of wondering, you know, what did I do wrong or, you know, what's wrong with me. It's almost like they don't even want to go there on a feeling state. Because I think of it, there's still a taboo surrounding it.
Hello?
Hello, Bonnie.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, I think I lost you.
Yeah, we were talking, and all of a sudden I heard absolutely nothing. So I said, well, okay, well, I'll call back.
I know, I think that Blog Talk Radio is not catching up with the time change either.
That
that's
might
possible,
be.
Right?
I think that's true.
When I thought you were gone and I was speaking, I was talking about how a lot of times, you know, I've had women tell me that they're afraid to say anything because they've been accused of making up these stories, like you're getting back at your husband by saying he's gay. You know, because they don't believe it, so they make it like you're a liar and that's why you're saying this stuff.
Wow. And it ends up making, it re-injures you. It's like it's insult.
It re-injures you, exactly. Exactly. So that's why when you go to these get-togethers, what I find so wonderful about it is if you have 25 women in a room, you know, all of them have gone through different experiences. No two women have the same exact experience, but they all have the same emotional impact from the experience.
Yeah.
And it's like you don't have to say anything because everybody knows what you're thinking and feeling. And, you know, it's so sad because some women came out of wonderful marriages, but it still ends up the same. You know, when you're married to a gay man, it doesn't matter how wonderful he is, he's still a gay man.
Exactly.
And that's the hard part for a lot of women.
Yeah.
How's Robert doing?
Oh, he's doing wonderful.
Aww.
He's celebrating his birthday today.
What did he do?
He's celebrating a birthday today.
Oh, wow. Did you go out and celebrate?
We did last night. It was very nice.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That may be part of the reason I'm tired, too.
That probably is. I'm celebrating a little too much for his birthday. So I see that you, I see you have another book out. Is that correct?
Yes, I have finished it, and it's now being proofread by the editors, and so we're moving it along. The title is The Sound of My Soul, which makes it the second installment of my sound series, and I am very excited about it because I go even deeper than the first book, and I am so excited. And truly, this one is even more so a labor of love because I'm going more inside, and I'm very proud of this work. I can't wait for it to be available.
Can you give us a little preview about it?
Sure, I can. For those of you that are listening, The Sound of My Life, which is the first book that I wrote, was about my journey from losing the sound of my voice to finding it again. And we all know that when you lose the sound of your voice, you lose your way because you can't hear what the truest core of yourself is needing, wanting, and what purpose is contained in that. The sound of soul goes even deeper. It's not so much focusing on the sound of your voice this time, but the discerner of the voice, the discerner of the emotions and your intellect and your personality, that part of you that has been given to you that lets you know whether you're okay or not, that a lot of times we ignore because we've been taught to disregard how we feel. We've been taught to disregard that. And so it's very key to our aliveness to listen for that discerner that lets us know, even though we might be telling everybody else we're okay, instead of ignoring the part of us that says you're not okay, following that thread to the place where the body is buried so that you can truly be whole.
So I think that's really amazing that, you know, how many books are you planning for this series?
Well, it's funny because when I wrote The Sound of My Life, I thought that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then about less than 3 months later, I found myself pregnant with another book baby. Because I heard the insides of me, I heard my spirit that just said, there's another book in you, and told me the title. And it's really fraternal twins. It's so funny because it's like there are two books, and it gave me the titles of both, and I immediately knew the personalities of both books. So I've been writing them both at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like pushing out The Sound of My Soul first, but the other one is being pushed out just as right behind it.
Now, I know this may seem like a silly question, but has meeting the man who's the love of your life inspired you in any way with that?
I think so, because I mention him in both books. More so the second book, I think, than The Sound of My Soul. But truly, loving him helped expose a deeper part of me. So most definitely, he has been a catalyst for bringing perspective, even a greater perspective, to my life.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. It's like love opens you. Pain
and I think that's true. You know, I think that it's so true that the difference between being in a loving relationship and an abusive one is how you feel inspired by it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was, you know, married to my ex-husband, my gay ex-husband, I never was able to be creative because I was not myself. You know, I was kind of blown away from all of that. I didn't even know who I was anymore. I was certainly not able to be creative. But the difference between that and having a man who's loved me for all these years, for the last 20-plus years, is that, you know, I wake up feeling good about everything. So that in itself inspires you when you feel so good, just spending the day feeling good, instead of worrying that I'm walking on eggshells or, you know, do I have to worry about this and that? How's he going to react when I say this? What if he's helped? You know, instead of having to act defensively in life, that you can just get through life and feel good about it, And I know that really inspired me.
Yeah, it does me too. And what I found is it's been a safe place, not just a safe place as far as feeling creative and giddy and all that, which all comes with it, but a safe place for things that might have laid buried inside of me are now coming up to the forefront, and I'm able to confront them and see them without it taking me back to a painful place. It's almost like you're looking at your pain from a different perspective. So
mm-hmm.
it's no longer threatening.
Exactly. You can deal with it, and you can move past it.
Yeah.
Because you have encouragement from someone who understands it. And I
think
that the whole difference in your success, you know, if you don't mind, is it okay if I just read a little bit from your first book? Would that be okay with you?
Sure.
Would you mind if I read it from your book? Because I would like our listeners to hear it. Would that be okay?
Oh, that would be absolutely fine.
Okay. In your introduction, you say that every life has a sound, a voice to be heard, a song to be sung, a note to be played. I became aware of that note as early as 7 years old. That note inside of me was drawn to the piano. As my older sister rehearsed her scales, someone else was playing on the scales of my soul, drawing me to that upright white antique piano. A moth to a flame, that's what it was. I was drawn to those shiny piano keys and had to touch them. Mom, my sister yelled, Suzette keeps playing the piano while I try to practice. I braced myself for a disapproving voice or a threat coming out of the next room, but I honestly can't ever recall hearing Mama tell me to stop. Upset, my sister stormed away, much to my joy. I hopped onto the seat and, with one finger, tapped the keys. Precocious and full of wonder, I played the piano and sang loudly and joyfully. It wasn't long before it became apparent to me and to my family that I wasn't just interested, but there was a gift, a real gift. Not only could I play by ear, but I sang with bravado of a seasoned performer. Mom remembers my singing and dancing to a 45 phonograph record. I love the Lord, I sang and danced all day long. The melody of my voice reverberated the song of my heart until that fateful day when I lost the sound of my voice. It all went downhill from there. The journey for me has been to recover my song, my heart song. It's been an arduous journey riddled with inconsistencies, but God has been faithful. What I've learned is this. It's not enough to hear someone else's voice or to sing someone else's song or play the note that you heard someone else play. I had to tune into my sound, and by doing so, I have recovered not only the sound of my voice, but also the sound of my life. The sound of my life is about my journey from being in the background to believing that my dreams matter. I worked hard to make sure the timbre of my voice is in every single word. I want you to know me and feel me. I want to speak to the dream in your heart. That dream has taken the back seat as you have strived to live up to something different. No teacher-student dynamic between us. No, no, no. I want to tap on the microphone of your life to amplify that small voice inside of you. The book is to provoke you to go honest about where you are, get clear about where you want to go, and in the words of Sergeant Vince Carter from the sitcom Gomer Pyle, to move it, move it, move it. I've also worked hard to make sure the book is one I'd enjoy reading. I don't like thick books. I find them intimidating, to be quite honest. So I've kept it pretty short to make it an easy read. The chapters mirror actual coaching program I am launching concurrently. I've not included a lot of busy work, bars and graphs, bells and whistles. Just a few challenging questions to get your blood pumping and get your feet moving. You'll exercise your mind and your emotion, identifying your decision and choices in life, and recalibrating them to align where you want to be. And I think that is just so beautifully presented, Suzette.
Well, thank you.
You're letting people know that they can recalibrate their life, right?
You know,
even if it's gone off track.
Even if it's gone off track.
Mm-hmm.
They can do it. It takes work. It takes more than just feeling bad or more than just talking about it with their girlfriends. But there comes a point where talking has to give way to doing, where you have
mm-hmm.
to do the work to change your frame of reference, do the work to change your story, to change your focus, and to reach out for where you really want to go. And a lot of times people get stuck in telling that same story to the same group of people and having a good cry, but don't move in a different direction.
Do you find that much with people?
I find it very true, especially of straight wives, because we can get real caught up in, we can feel really great about having somebody who finally understands us, but that's only
mm-hmm.
one step. That's only one step in it. At some point, we have to stop crying on the shoulders of someone and start asking those questions. What am I doing here? What am I accomplishing? How can I change this? And when we start asking those questions, I believe the universe starts supplying us the answers, starts sending us resources and leaving us breadcrumbs so that we can find a way to get out of what's holding us
mm-hmm.
captive. And I think that's what the book is really about. It's about my journey from not just finding out that I have an issue here, but being determined to walk my way out of it and to reclaim my life, to take my life back, to get out of the closet. If he wants to stay in the closet, let him stay there. But for me to make a decision that I am not going to live in the closet and I am not going to be defined by this season in my life, I will love again and I will be loved again.
Now, did that take you a while to find that voice again?
It took a while. It didn't take a long time for my mind to change, but it took a while to walk it out. And there was a lot of falling and a lot of scraped knees and a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of different things. But one of the things I said is, you know what, I may fall, but I'd rather fall forward than keep falling backwards. And so
that's a very good way to look at it. Mm-hmm.
I was
falling.
But
if you don't move at all, then you don't even have a chance to move forward, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why listening to this show and reaching out to you, Bonnie, and reading your books and all those things, they were part of my journey of falling forward. This show, and at the time it wasn't so much the show, but it was the newsletters
uh-huh.
that I got from you and the emails that I got from you. They validated the truth of my experience, but they also gave me hope that I could have a different outcome. And so they
and
were
I
part
think
of
that's the- because, you know, sometimes you get so stuck in that muck, as I call it, that you really can't see that there can be another kind of an outcome because you're just so stuck. And that's
yes.
what I think you're saying, is that you have to find your sound again. You have to find
yes.
who you are again. And you can stay stuck and not fall either way. I mean, some people think it's safer to just to stay stuck. They don't want to take a chance because they are afraid of falling backwards. But if you're pushing forward, even if you fall backwards, it's going to be easier to get up the next time
yeah.
and the next time. And you're not falling as far back as you are moving ahead. Would you say that's true?
Very, very true, because it was funny. I had to first acknowledge that my ex was gay.
Uh-huh.
But then after that, I had to acknowledge that even bigger than that, because I was like, I never, as far as I knew, dated somebody gay again. But even bigger than that was that issue of emotional unavailability. So my falling forward had to be, no, I'm not falling backward into staying with a gay man or being with a gay man. But in my falling forward, I had to say, okay, this is bigger than a gay man. I have to hold myself accountable by educating myself and exposing myself to truth and asking the hard questions and exposing the elephant in the living room so that I realize this is bigger than him being gay. The issue is I have to stop attracting unavailable men,
mm-hmm.
whether they're straight or heterosexual. Because I need someone who can be emotionally there for me and embrace me as the woman that I am. So in the falling forward, it made my scope of my life bigger, and my pursuit was bigger.
Were there times when you thought that you would never get to this point?
Oh, yeah. There were times that I felt like I would never get this point, but I think what made even those times stuck in even that thinking was because I was constantly working towards something else. I was going to a relationship coach. I was reading books about men written by men. I was reading your books about, so I could understand those things about gay men that went deeper than you finding him in bed with somebody else, because a lot of us women never found our husbands in a compromising situation. And a lot of times when you don't know that, you stay stuck because you don't have fact. So your books gave even more fact and more credence to our intuition. So it's in the educating of ourselves. Sometimes until we can feel the energy or the strength in our ankles to stand by ourselves, we have to start feeding ourselves a different diet. We have to start feeding ourselves the truth about our gay husbands. We have to feed ourselves the truth about men in general. We have to start feeding ourselves the truth. And so even though I had those moments of despair, I didn't stop eating.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a while, am I continuing to eat? I continued to gain strength in the areas that were being starved.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. You know, it's just like nourishing yourself in other, you know, physical ways. You need to nourish yourself in emotional ways, right?
Yes. And part of that is admitting that you don't know. A lot of us, our pride and our egos are already hurt. But one of the things I had to tell myself is, though you've been married twice, you don't know a dang thing about men. You don't know about them. So you are putting a feminine mind, you're looking at them through a feminine mind when you need to, in the words of Steve Harvey, act like a lady but think like a man. You need to
mm-hmm.
understand how you think so you won't keep rationalizing not being treated right.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know how they think, how they express love. What's the difference in how a straight man expresses love? What's the difference? Find out what that difference is. Read about it. Talk about it. Get around somebody who doesn't have an ulterior motive. My go-to person was my cousin, my family member, who started telling me the truth about me and started exposing to me the player's handbook, he called it. And so I started feeding
myself. Do you have a copy of that?
He never gave me a copy of it.
I'd like
it was
to read
so
that book. The player's handbook, you got to love it, right?
Got to love it. But I'm grateful because when you really want change, Bonnie, I found it to be true. When you get to the point where you really want change, the universe cooperates and starts sending you things to help move you along.
Mm-hmm. But you got to want it. And not only do you have to want it, Suzette, but let's be honest, you have to go after it.
Yes.
You know, it's like when I meet women and they tell me, oh, it's so hard to meet a nice guy. Okay, what are you doing to meet him? Well,
Exactly. Nothing
really. Okay, so you're going to be sitting at home watching, you know, TV, and one day a guy's going to knock at your door and say, I heard you're looking for a nice guy. Here I am. It doesn't work that way.
It doesn't work that way.
You
got to
work
not.
It.
And we
you
got to
go out
off.
And do it.
Yes, and a lot of the biggest thing that we have to overcome is laziness. you know, a lot of times because we have been in the situations that we have been in, we have become passive. We have become settled, and we want life to just, like you said, just pop up at our doorstep. We don't want to do the work. And a lot of times we have to dust off that laziness and get off our do-nothingness and go after. And I don't mean chase a man down, but chase our wholeness down. Chase our lives. Get our lives back. We got to chase it. We got to go for it. We got to go hard for it because you have to overcome the inertia of what being married to somebody gay has done. It's like an airplane that has to clear the runway.
I mean, I meet so many women. I don't know if this was your case. After these relationships, and you had a double dose of it, but, you know, they say, that's it for me. I'm not trying again. I've had it. You know, do you meet women like that and feel like it's over?
Oh, yeah. And for a while, I was not there for a minute because I think there is a point where you've got to unplug. You know, it's almost like you've got to basically purge as much of what has happened to you out before you start getting involved with somebody else. Because when I first left my husband, I was in no shape for anybody. So most of the work that I did was on myself. But at some point, that is if you come to that conclusion that you're supposed to be with someone that loves you. And I don't think every woman comes to that. Some women find out they are completely happy being single, and that's okay for them. But for me, after the smoke cleared, as I got over my hurt feelings and got over this just wanting to breathe for a minute, when I just took in enough air to expand my lungs again and I could finally breathe, I realized that I would be doing myself a disservice if I did not create a heart to love again. Because I felt like in every fiber of my being that being loved by someone was part of my birthright, was a part of my purpose.
And
so I started
becoming
a willing participant and becoming a relator and becoming a good partner so that I could, number one, recognize a good partner and so that I could be a good partner.
And I think that in order to be, don't you feel like in order to be a good partner, you have to love yourself first?
Yes.
You have to understand what love is about.
Yes. And part of that, and we find that as we're finding out about loving ourselves and what love is about, that's where our standards come in. Not so much hands have to be bigger than mine. Not so much he's got to have a six-pack. Not so much he's got to be 6'1". But it becomes more the standards flow out of our own self-value. He has to have regard for my feelings. He has to have regard of me, not just as an emotional woman, but as a sexual woman. I have to feel free to be sexual with him. And that I feel like he likes it. You know, there has to be certain standards that respect you as a woman and as a
And I think a lot of women don't see that, Suzette. I think they've lost that, you know?
Yeah. That's
why
the work is
so important.
Yeah, that's why the work is so important. Because as long as they stay in those marriages, they will never know how valuable they are.
I know, and I think that I tell women there's no way you can heal while you're in those marriages because there's a daily reminder of where you are when you see that man every day.
Yeah, so
there's
true.
No
and
way you can start that healing process.
How can you heal a hemorrhage
unless
you stop it? As long as you're with him, it's always creating a hemorrhage. It's always. It never you never stop the wound doesn't get healed so that you can stop hemorrhaging. It can't. It can't.
How about women who can't let go? Like, I have women who say to me, I've heard them say, I just love him so much. I love him so much. My life without him is going to be nothing. I know he's gay, but, you know, sex isn't everything. He promised he won't do it. You know, he loves me too. He doesn't want to leave. You know, what do you say to women like that?
Denial is not bliss.
Mm-hmm.
Denial is not bliss. And, you know, the thing about it is I know that I cannot wake a person up before they're ready to wake up. I can't do that. The only thing that I can do for them, though, is offer them another way of seeing things. And I think the reason why a lot stay like that way is because they never opened themselves up to a different way of seeing it. So even though they might be saying it right now, the more they hear truth, the more it wears down their reasons for staying. So
interesting that when we were in our meeting in, you know, Houston, it was beyond interesting. It was very painful because we had Jason, who runs our adult group, you know, do a presentation. But it was so interesting to see how many women who thought they were protecting their children by staying together in these, you know, really, you know, ridiculous marriages, because kids can really sense when something's wrong, and they really suffer from anxiety and depression at young ages because they know there's something unreal going on in front of them. And, you know, I thought it was like a really important lesson for women to learn. Even though you think you're protecting your children, you're not protecting them. In some cases, you're protecting yourself because you're afraid to make the move and because you're afraid to move on. But you're not really helping them. They know something is wrong. And a lot of them do suffer from, you know, depression, anxiety, all different kinds of psychological problems, trust. You know, it's really pretty sad to me.
Yeah.
You know, that women don't understand this, that you have to, you know, I know it's so hard for some women, especially financially. You know, finances seem to pull the purses, you know, pull the strings, jump you up and down. But I always say there's a way out, and you can always live on less. And we lived on very little. You know, when I got divorced or I separated, you know, we had practically nothing. And even so, we had one thing that I never had with everything, and that was called peace of mind. Because I think once you have peace of mind, then you can make clear decisions. Whereas if you don't, your mind gets muddled. Do you feel that way?
Very much so. I think for a lot of women that depend on their husbands economically, which I was one of them, when I left him the second time, I had to start over from scratch. It was almost like the boat that I was in became shipwrecked, and me and my son came to shore on a plank. Everything.
That's a good description of it.
Was gone. Everything. And so it was really scary to rebuild. But the thing that I found to be true is because I had busted out of that prison, I was able to think more freely, creative ways to get it back. And it took
because
some time.
Because you had a clear mind. You know what? When I lived with my, you know, ex-husband, my mind was never clear. I was always racing ahead of, you know, the game, trying to always pick up pieces that would never fit together. You know, you're missing that missing piece of the puzzle. You don't know what you're looking for. So you're always running around like in a cage, you know, just going from corner to corner, trying to figure out what's the I slip up. What did I say that I shouldn't say? Second-guessing yourself constantly. I found myself doing that. Did you?
Yes. Yes.
I'm always wondering, did I do something wrong? Why is he mad? Why isn't he talking to me? You know, why is he yelling at me? And I used to say with my ex-husband, he used to shout me down to shut me up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what he used to do. You know, he'd be yelling all the time, and it would just unnerve me or unhinge me. And then I kept thinking, well, how can I not get him mad? What am I going to say that's not going to get him all this upset? I don't want him screaming at me. I don't want him screaming when the kids are little. You know, they were babies. You know, it was jolting to them also, you know, to be in the midst of that. So it was always like very quietly around corners, almost like I was sneaking in and out, but it certainly turned me into somebody who I didn't like at all. That was the one stage of my life I said to myself, I don't like me. I don't like what I've become. And I don't know how to stop it. You know, that's my problem. I think sometimes when you're so stuck in it, you don't know how to get out of it, and you just go with the flow. Do you think that happens?
Oh, yes. And what you said was so key. You are so enmeshed in what's not right with your husband, what's not right, what's going on, the moods, the manipulations, the silent treatments, the play on words, the using what they know about you against you. You get so caught up in trying to figure that out.
Exactly.
That your mind is free. You. How can you be creative? How can
you even see
when you're swept up like that? It's like it's almost like being underwater. You're underwater fighting. You can't see. As long as you're underwater fighting, you can't see what's around you.
I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. I came from the top to the bottom. I mean, I was strong when I met him. I really was. I was leading a revolutionary movement in this country. I mean, I was a really strong woman. But I don't know, no matter how strong you are, when you get to a guy who knows how to manipulate and change everything, you can weaken very quickly. And any kind of faith in yourself can go poof out the window. And, you know, I think that even though it's at a strong point in my life, I've been most of my life at weaker points. And they can sense that vulnerability when they meet you, that, you've had body things in your past and you're not real secure and you want somebody to love you. And, you know, I had a show on earlier tonight because I have a book author's show at 7 o'clock or something totally different. And I had a woman named Adrienne Jones. She wrote a book called Just a Victim. And it was a really sad show because she's a very lovely lady in Alabama. And we were talking about a book she wrote before this current one about her sister who, you know, was a boyfriend who was very abusive. And she got away from him and then met somebody else who was very abusive and ended up, you know, shooting her in the face 6 times and killing her.
Wow.
And he had such power over her. He looked at her wrong. She knew not to talk, not to say a word, you know, at her family gatherings and stuff. That he had such control over her. And you think to yourself, how does a woman get into this position not only once but twice of allowing, feeling so bad about herself that she can't even get up and say something for herself? But I see it happening all the time. And I saw it happening to me, which is why I don't like to judge anyone.
Yeah.
You know, if I could see that happen to me, why would I think it couldn't happen to someone else? You just have to be lucky to get out of it, but I can see why people can't.
I can see that, you know, too. I think every time we're at that pivotal moment where a moment where we're not being, where we sense something is not quite right, but we rationalize it, we give away a piece of ourselves. And the longer you stay in a situation where you got to constantly give away a piece of yourself in order to be in it, it is no wonder that there's nothing left.
Nothing left at all. And it's kind of like, you know, Donna Anderson was a guest on our show a few weeks ago from lovefraud.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her site because of the fact that, you know, there are so many sociopaths and vultures out there of all different kinds. But she said to me that, you know, she did a survey one time, and she asked, you know, like 100 women this question, did you ever feel that something was wrong with your man before you started going with him? And 73% said yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
something was right, but they were hoping it would change or get better. You know, so aren't women starting out from, you know, a vulnerable place to start with if we keep thinking we can fix everything and everyone?
Yep. I'm part of that 73% because I thought the same thing.
Okay.
I sensed something was off, but because I didn't know, I did not realize that it was really the truth of me, that it was my intuition. I didn't know it. I just thought it was a feeling, and it was easily, you know, explained away with a scripture and a Bible verse, you know, that overrode it. But I sensed something was off.
Uh-huh.
But nobody around me could help me understand it. And because
well,
I didn't have
it in
fact, I went along with what he said. He said I had been around men that were so bad for me, I didn't recognize the right one. And,
uh-huh.
you know, a couple of scriptures, which we talked about that, where he was saying, you know, here I am, somebody who really wants to love you and marry you, and you going to break up with me because I ain't slobbering all over you?
And then
wow.
You felt bad about it, right?
Oh, truly. To the point
because
I come back
begging. Wrong with you.
Yeah, begging him to please forgive me.
Uh-huh.
You know? So
it starts from right at the beginning, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have long until that happens.
Yep.
You know, I think it's just so sad to see how, you know, so many women are really, you know, so uninformed. Or I don't know what makes us so needy. Maybe we're just socialized that way. I know it was one thing when I was little. You're a lot younger than me. Were you socialized that way, that in order to be validated, you need a man?
Yep.
And you think that women today are the same?
Yep. Especially because look at all the people who, and it's not a criticism, but look at all the people who are growing up in homes that are broken, even if they're still together, or fathers who are there present, but they're not available.
Uh-huh.
Kids who are having to parent themselves and
uh-huh.
being left with their own devices to figure life out. Young girls who are vulnerable because they need their validation from their daddies, and their daddies either don't understand how important that is or they're not around. So whenever you have these young ladies who are growing up, I think that's part of the reason why there is an epidemic of middle schoolers and teenage young girls who are being beat by their boyfriends.
Uh-huh.
Because
it's
a serious problem. It's
and
a serious
sad.
Problem. So we have to find a way to heal that in them while they're young so that they will not
uh-huh.
end up in situations worse than us.
Well, I think part of that is role modeling, right?
Yes, part of it is role modeling and telling them the truth. And I don't mean a bitter truth. I don't mean
right.
all men are dogs, all men
uh-huh.
want one thing. Not that kind of stuff that people tell their children that cause them to be unbalanced. And
uh-huh.
this may end up not being popular, but I'm going to say it anyway. I think we spend so much of our time to compensate trying to tell our girls, yeah, you can be all you can be. Get in those books. Go after your dreams. We put them in a lot of extracurricular activities. We get them busy, 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 busy. But we do not teach them about relationships. We do not teach them about balanced relationships. We don't know how to teach them to recognize a good boy at school. We don't teach them how to recognize a good friend. We don't teach them. So they end up with a whole lot of book learning and a whole lot. They might end up being the CEO of companies, but their relationships suck
uh-huh.
because we don't teach them And I think it's our responsibility with our girls and our boys to not just teach them to go after their dreams, but to teach them how to be relatable, because when all is said and done, they're going to want somebody to love. And whatever is broken in them and whatever has questions that have not been answered, it's going to create a deficit that's going to cause them to be attracted to men that cannot possibly give them what they so deeply desire. So we have a responsibility as parents to get more involved in our children's
lives. Do you think you can solve everything that way? I think a lot of times you talk to kids, they're not even going to listen to you.
They act like they're not listening, but they are.
I think in the later years they'll find that out. But I think, you know, it's just today with peer pressure being what it is, it's just so difficult, isn't it?
It's difficult, but I think most kids really want the validation of their parents.
Mm-hmm. But even at a young age?
Even with peer pressure being what it is, at the heart and core, unless children are troubled and have maybe some chemical imbalances or have some issues. You know what I'm saying? All things being normal. All things being normal, I think most kids really want the approval of their parents. They do. They really want their parents to be interested. They might heave and haw and act like they're not listening. But they really...
Every child wants to be loved, is that right?
Oh, yeah. They do.
Uh-huh.
They truly do. And they can act like they don't. You know, they can act like they don't care. They can act like they're not listening. And that's just teenagers for you. But for the most part, the biggest influencer in their lives are their parents.
Uh-huh.
Because they so desperately desire that connection. That if they don't have it, they try to recreate it with their peers.
Yeah. And I think you're right. That's a really good way to look at it. If they don't have it there, they try to recreate it in a way that may not come out positive, right?
Exactly. That's why I believe that's part of the reason why a lot of these young men find getting gangs. They're looking for a sense of family. They're looking for a sense of connection. They're looking for validation.
I don't know what they're thinking. But I see guys who have 7 or 8 children. They're 27, 28 years old. What are they thinking?
God only knows.
I don't get it. I really never understand why people think it's okay to just bring children in and pop them out. Like, you know,
yeah.
I don't get it. They can't care of them. They're not good parents. They don't do their best with parenting. And I see it all the time. And I don't see it getting better. I just think our society is getting more confusing, don't you?
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting because then you ask yourself, how can politicians and people in the public eye get folk pregnant? It's like, didn't you know to use a condom? Didn't you know? I mean, you got very smart, brilliant people running various companies, people in the public eye, people that know better.
Uh-huh.
That are having unprotected sex,
right,
and are ending up with these children. So it's whether it's 1 or 2 or 10, I think it's the two sides of the very same coin.
You know, I always say I don't know what people are thinking. You know, children is such a major responsibility, and your life has to be in such a good place to be successful in raising them.
Yeah.
You know, you're having a million problems. Do you think your kid's going to just be happy-go-lucky and come out fine? I mean, I just don't get it. You know.
And the thing about it, Bonnie, even parenting my son, there was a point in my life where I said, okay, he's going to have issues, but I'd rather him have the 5 issues of me leaving a bad marriage than to have the 10 issues of me staying.
And I think that's true. I think a lot of it's just that also, well, I'll tell you one thing that really upsets me when I hear women say, well, you know, if I stay longer, I'll get more money out of this. You know, I just don't get that. When I walked out of one marriage before my gay husband, I took a suitcase and I left because I wanted to be happy. Money was not going to be happy, trust me. And when my ex-husband was, you know, father of my children, when he left, and he left me with practically nothing. I had to go on welfare for 3 years because I had nothing. Mm-hmm. I had a GED. I had no education. And yet, as hard as it was, and even though I had nothing, it was still easier than being supported, you know, more financially, but less emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can always be with less, but you can't be with less, I always say.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But you can't find peace of mind. I mean, where are you going to get that from? By having, you know, another trinket or another piece of jewelry? You know, is it worth it? And is it worth it for your kids who have to grow up in that environment? So sometimes I think women have to get their priorities, you know, in real good order. I don't get it. Do you have women who come to you who aren't moving either?
Well, I actually, when I was contemplating leaving my gay husband, I had a friend or two telling me, well, you know what? So that you might want to think about this because I'm looking around at this house you're living in, these cars you're driving, and, you know, you better think hard about it because, I mean, I think I could, you know, nobody would blame you if you got you something on the side.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is got married, though ignorant as I was, I got married because I wanted family. I wanted love. I wanted wholeness. I wanted a sense of companionship. And so I didn't get married for the money. So why stay for it? That's not what I got married for, because there was something in me that believed that whatever he had, maybe not having, you know, $250,000 house, but certainly being able to live, I felt like I had what it took, that I could have a life. I could have a roof over my head. You know, I could have that. But the companionship piece was why I got married. Because I had a job when I married him. You know, I was making my own way before I married him. So I didn't marry him for that. Because when I first married him, I was the major breadwinner the first time around. It wasn't until the second time around that he had conceived the idea of a company that he made more than me. So, you know. But, yeah, I do come upon people that find so many different reasons for justifying staying in miserable situations.
And I don't mean just with a gay husband. I with the straight people, too.
Yeah, very much so.
They're miserable, but they're afraid to move on.
Yeah, or they're afraid of appearances. Some people put so much stock in appearances. They'll stay in something that isn't working because they don't want it to appear to other people
right.
as being broken.
Exactly. I just never get that.
No,
I don't think I ever will. I mean, I know it's different strokes for different folks, but that's one stroke I'm not taking.
Yeah.
You know, I think you only go through life one time, and you don't get a special award because you lived miserably, right?
No, you sure don't.
You're not giving out plaques for that one either.
No, not getting a plaque for that one.
Right.
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, why would you care what anybody thinks? You know, things don't work in life. You know, 50% of all people get divorced.
That's right.
It's not like when I was growing up and we were the first divorce on the block and people looked at us strange. Those days are long gone.
Yeah, it's becoming normal for kids to say that, you know, they're from a single-parent household. that's becoming more the norm. It's becoming almost like less the norm for somebody to say that they, you know, their mom and their dad are still together. And even
yeah.
less to say their mom and dad are still together and in love with each other.
Now, that would be very odd to find, wouldn't it?
And it's sad because that should be the reason for being together, you know,
uh-huh.
but it's becoming very rare to find
uh-huh.
people who are together. And truly, if you were to really, really, really be a fly on the wall in their households
uh-huh.
to find that they really are together because they truly love each other. They truly love each other.
Well, I know there has to be somebody out there like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really have. They're really in love with each other after 20, 30, 40 years and raising
family.
That's going to
be me. That's going to be me.
I'd be 50 years for you, Suzette.
Yes.
Right?
50 years. Yes, forever young.
Oh, I'm so happy that, you know, you found the true love of your life. But he didn't just pop up at your door. You had to look for him, right?
I had to recognize him because, really, we talk about it. If it had been a year before, I wouldn't have recognized him. Had
uh-huh.
I not done, the work to
right.
challenge myself, to deprogram myself from being attracted to unavailable men, to starting to find somebody available, attractive. And that's something I intention in my own mind. I said, when people say you can't help who you love, I said, I beg to differ. I beg
uh-huh.
to differ. And I started challenging myself
uh-huh.
to recreate that. I said, I want to be attracted and find a good man sexy. I want to find a good man attractive. And I started challenging myself for that. And I told my sweet Robert, I said, you know what, had I met you a year before, I wouldn't have recognized you. But I'm grateful
you know
for
what?
Doing the work. And now to be able to recognize him.
I think also is that I think we have to tell women the real message from tonight, because we're going to be ending in a moment, because we've overstayed our hour even. So that's wonderful.
We're
invigorated by this. But I think you can't go into any relationship like you're saying with the thought of I can fix him.
Yes.
Once you have to start fixing something, then it's already too broken. Wouldn't you say that?
I would say that.
Well,
I think you're right.
No, nobody's perfect, and I'm not saying you have to meet somebody who's perfect. But you can't go with someone who's too broken that you think you have to fix up. That's not what, you know, maturing from a relationship is. You have to find somebody solid starting out and then
yes.
build a relationship. Because otherwise you're just with another needy man who's going to zap all the strength out of you, take everything from you, and you can be a straight man and the same thing's going to happen. You need to do
yes.
better for yourself than that, I would think.
Oh, indeed. And I'd rather his imperfection to be he leaves the toilet seat up than for his
right.
imperfection to be that he does not care how I feel.
Exactly.
So
I
can
I
work with
that. Women, when you're making choices, again, you have to be aware of what you need to look for and not look at the superficial stuff that gets us into trouble every time.
That's
and
right.
It does, because we're willing to settle and just grab something coming along that may look good without
yeah.
really looking at it the correct way.
That's right.
So maybe the next time you come on months is that we can talk to women about what they need to look for in a man. You know, a little checklist.
That's good. Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good.
Yeah. I know. We'll all get a checklist together. And if a man doesn't pass the criteria, then you have to say goodbye before you say hello.
Hello.
Sitting at, right?
That's right. That's right.
Exactly. So that will be our goal for next month. How's that?
Oh, that's exciting. Yes, yes, yes.
And if any of our listeners have any ideas they would like to share with us about what they look for in a man, please send it to me at bondk@aol.com. Well, Suzette, our show has really quickly gone. I can't believe it. We were so tired starting out.
I know. I'm not tired anymore.
I know. I wish you could do a song for me. Why don't we do one before we end?
Sure.
I'll pick something that we have here. Both know. How about the song I Can See Clearly Now? Do you know that one?
Yeah, I know that one.
I really like that. We can sing along with that because I think that's where this brings us to, that we can see again. We can see the truth. We don't have to delude ourselves with lies. So let's see if we can do this. Let's see if it comes on.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me
high. Well, isn't that a beautiful thought?
I love it.
I know. I think that once you see clarity and you can see a bright, sunshiny day is coming, the clouds are gone, you can see again. To me, there's nothing more beautiful than that. So with that in mind, Suzette, I'll be talking to you again in a few weeks with our list of what to look for in a good man. How's that?
Oh, that's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. Well, Suzette, you know I love you.
Oh, I love you too, Bonnie.
And thank you so much for co-hosting with me every month. You always bring such upbeat feeling when I have to hang up. I feel good, like that bright, sunshiny day.
So
I'll look forward to seeing you, talking to you in a few weeks from now. And you have a wonderful month. You give Robert a big hug and kiss from me.
I will.
All right?
All righty.
And I love you, Suzette, and love to all of our listening audience. Have a bright, sunshiny week, not just today, but the whole week.
Yes, indeed.
Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.